You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Today, President Bush declared that the time for diplomacy is over. And today, Peace Watch convened a roundtable discussion with leaders of labor, media, and the U.S. legislature to explore what options, if any, are open for opponents who want to stop an invasion into Iraq. We are joined by U.S. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Houston, Texas, Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, co-founder and constitutional rights attorney for a Partnership for Civil Justice, who's working with Ramsey Clark for articles of impeachment against Bush, Michael Eisenshur, coordinator of the Labor Committee for Peace and Justice in the Bay Area, and U.S. Labor Against the War, David Brock, author of Blinded by the Right and former so-called media hitman for the conservative right, and Ambrose Lane, senior host of We Ourselves on Pacifica Station WPFW. We explore the question of what's next now that the U.S. has withdrawn the proposed U.N. resolution calling for the use of force against Iraq. Is war inevitable? Representative Sheila Jackson Lee begins.
I refuse to give up on the concept of peace, so I realize that we're in, as Martin Luther King has said, 5 minutes before midnight and the clock may be striking as we speak. But we have offered some suggestions for alternatives. Certainly, it would be great if Saddam Hussein walked away. But I believe that as Human Watch has been arguing for a number of months, that the United Nations could convene a UN war crimes tribunal, indict him, and try him for war crimes. I believe that we could begin utilizing humanitarian aid and democratization, focus on the Mideast and the war on terrorism, and again, allow the UN inspections to go forward. But I think procedurally, what I would hope to secure from these next 48 hours is a pressing by the American people in their understanding of the Constitution, and that is that Congress is the sole decider about the question of war under Article 1, Section 8, and that if nothing else, that there'll be waves of email and calls to demand that we debate this question on the floor of the House and the Senate.
So would it be possible to bring President Bush up on war crimes when the United States is not signed on to the International Criminal Court?
Well, George Bush, this is Mara Verheyden-Hilliard. George Bush has already committed crimes against peace and crimes against humanity under international law, under what was created at the Nuremberg Charter, under what is in existence under the UN Charter. And the fact that he's seeking UN support for his war of aggression and has sought it in the past wouldn't ratify an illegal war under any circumstances. The fact that he doesn't have it now is not the determinative factor in whether or not he's committing war crimes. He has committed them. He has threatened to commit them. And the issue of crimes against peace, that's considered the most significant crime, war crime, because without crimes against peace, without waging a war of aggression, if you don't have that, then you don't have the onslaught of war. And his threats to wage a war of aggression against a country that is not threatening, has not attacked the United States, is a war crime.
What are the chances of that actually happening?
I think that we're seeing mass opposition, uprising of millions of people around the world that has significantly held back this administration. The carnage would have started months ago, but for the opposition and the outpouring in the streets. And I, too, have not given up hope that people will be able to stop this from going forward. And if the administration is set on carrying forth a war of aggression against the will of virtually the entire population of this planet, it is going to be met with such resistance of such an enormity, because the fact is, while Bush can call for a war, he is not going to fight it. Cheney is not going to fight it. They are not the ones that load the trains. They're not the ones that load the ships or the trucks. And the war can't happen if people refuse to cooperate and people refuse to carry it out.
I was before 8,000 to 10,000 people in Austin this past weekend, obviously a small dot related to the many other efforts on last Saturday, as it was and has continued throughout. There were veterans in that audience. And I think one of the things that we have to divide on, or when I say divide, have to really stand up against, is that the opposition that is being expressed is not patriotic or American. And I think the presence of those veterans who have actually seen war, who are standing up against a preemptive unilateral attack on another country, is going to be a very vital part, because they will be able to give further legitimacy to those of us who are committed to our troops because they are following orders of the commander-in-chief committed to them as friends and neighbors and Americans, but realize that we need to make the right decision for humanity. So as this proceeds, I believe civil disobedience and the petitioning of the government will continue and the voices will raise. We as legislators must continue to legislate, and we are filing legislation as we speak against the preemptive attack, against the responsibility of Congress only to declare war, and on the question of the funding as well.
That was U.S. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee. What about any concrete actions that any of you are planning?
This is Michael Eisinger. U.S. Labor Against the War is calling upon trade unionists across the country to contact their congressional representatives to urge immediate adoption of House Joint Resolution 20, which has been introduced by Representative DeFazio, Stark, Lee, and many others. And that resolution would very simply revoke the authorization Congress has given the president to conduct military action. Were that done, they would then be in a position to withdraw financial support because Congress holds the purse strings. And by cutting off the funding or allowing funding only for the purpose of withdrawing troops rather than committing them, they would be in a position to undermine the president's illegal actions. And then finally, of course, there is the question of impeachment.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask this question of Michael. Are there any specific labor stoppages or strikes planned in the event that the bombs actually start falling or dropping over Baghdad?
Trade union federations in various parts of the world have already announced that they intend to take direct action in Italy, in Germany, in England, in Australia. We're aware of commitments that people have made to take work stoppages. Some work stoppages have already occurred. There were some over the weekend.
What about in this country?
In this country, no union that I'm aware of has announced formal work stoppages. However, we are aware that many individual workers are planning to take action. Many of them are going to call in sick to work and go to the demonstrations in their nearest community. In San Francisco, for example, I'm in Berkeley, there will be actions in the streets of San Francisco, and I know for a fact that many union people are planning to participate. This country has created a web of legal straitjackets, shackles on labor that make it much more difficult for unions to do political strikes. There are very rare exceptions to that, but they are exceptions.
Ambrose Lane?
Yeah, I was asking the question whether or not the impeachment articles have been submitted to the Congress.
I don't know of any at this time.
This is Marva Hayden-Hillier. There are draft
articles
of impeachment, and we are receiving a huge, massive outpouring of grassroots support for this. Literally tens upon tens of thousands of people just in the last number of days are pouring in.
Yeah, I understand
in.
Well over 100,000 have
correct.
Already done it.
At votetoimpeach.org, and we are urging a member of Congress to introduce these articles of impeachment. That's all it takes. It's one member of Congress.
Have those articles also been submitted to all the major newspapers and other news outlets?
Yes, these articles have been, they've been announced, they've been publicized. They are up on the website, votetoimpeach.org.
We're going to have to target all those congressmen who supported giving of authority outside of the Constitution. And we're going to have to do it by phone tree and by email tree. And we've got to do that urgently. And the other thing is that bothers me is that only recently have the information come out. For example, we keep hearing the braggarts talk about 15 solid votes. Well, the vote that was taken was based on the lies told by our own government and by Blair. We said that we had the evidence, and yet just yesterday's newspaper says that Senator Carl Levin had questioned the CIA about it, and they said there was no evidence. The best evidence they had, they've already given to the inspectors, and the inspectors found nothing. So the bragging that 15 votes were cast solidly supporting 1441 should be challenged on the basis they were based on lies.
Andy, if I might add, in addition to Fazio's resolution, I filed H-Con Res 2 on the first day of Congress as well with a number of similar co-sponsors. that argued for the repeal of the October resolution that was put on by Congress on the basis of, one, the facts given was the nexus between 9/11 and Iraq, two, the question of the fact that we were under imminent attack. We were supposed to be under imminent attack. It was right before the election. And then three, information regarding North Korea was not widely given to the United States Congress. So
it was held up for a year.
Mm-hmm. I believe that we did not declare war at that time, and so I would hope that you'd push for a number of legislative initiatives to be responded to, but more importantly is to get back on the floor of the House and the Senate and re-debate this question as we should in respect to the American people's voice.
Representative Lee.
Declaration of war.
Yes, Representative Lee, have you considered being the representative to actually submit these articles of impeachment to the Congress?
No, I've not, and certainly I'm willing to listen. I think many individuals are hearing about this and do not have the articles in our possession and believe that the alternatives that we're looking at right now are taking our priority.
Mm. After the massive worldwide protest on February 15th, President Bush said that he doesn't decide his foreign policy based on focus groups and that the protesters wouldn't have any effect on determining the administration's actions regarding Iraq. Do any of you think that we'll reach a point when Bush, Blair, and Aznar have no choice but to pay attention to the worldwide outcry?
Well, in addition to working on the Articles of Impeachment, I've also been an organizer with the anti-war movement in the U.S., And in terms of the response from the administration to people in the streets, I mean, it's a continuation of the same arrogant nature that they take with regard to the international community as a whole. They act unilaterally with regard to all of the other member states of the UN, and they act unilaterally with regard to the people of the United States, constantly reflecting that Bush and the few people around him that support big oil and big banking are going to conduct their business as they see fit, really ignoring the will of everyone else. But that's why we're seeing such a massive outpouring of people. And that kind of government cannot continue. It will not continue.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think the people are going to stop. I think there are many options still on the table. We've not concluded, I think, the ultimate response that may be given. I happen to believe in all of our efforts being nonviolent and through efforts of civil disobedience or the legislative process. I just think that the question of moving forward without the world body politic is a very dangerous position to have us in as Americans and have the world in, and that is to not formulate a consensus where the world is joined in outrage over some horror or inhumanity to man, and that's what we have now. Most people outside of the boundaries of the United States joined us in their sympathy on 9/11. Most of them now are questioning why we would all of a sudden change our policies from being a defender, if you will, to an offender or an aggressor. That's the real singular question that is going to change the history of this nation in the 21st century, and I think we're going to have to address that.
Many who are polled, according to the Gallup polls, if you believe them, the majority of Americans, however, support the president. David Brock, I'm wondering if you can address how has the media's coverage influenced public opinion towards this war?
Well, I'll give you one example. I believe there was an AP poll out today that showed 50% support, and yet it was headlined a majority support Bush. And so that's not accurate. And I think that the grassroots movements are certainly an important piece of this puzzle, but I'm afraid we just haven't had the debate in the country, and those movements haven't gotten the coverage in the media that would force Bush to pay attention and respond. And I think, you know, I mean, I've been in the right-wing press, and I've written a book about how it operates, and it's a very well-coordinated strategy to do that. First of all, you have a so-called mainstream press that I think is intimidated by right-wing pressure groups, by right-wing media monitors who have a very well-coordinated campaign to question the patriotism of people on the air, like our network news anchors. And so you have to wonder, you know, why hasn't the media challenge the administration on a lot of the misinformation that's come out, the shifting rationales, the shifting goals. We got a new goal yesterday all of a sudden from Vice President Cheney on Meet the Press. But that inconsistency has not been pointed out by the press. The pretense that this decision hasn't already been made, all of these things the press just sort of goes along with. Then you have a problem in the commentary spectrum. You have conservative newspaper editorial boards. You have newspapers like the Washington Post, where the columnists are heavily weighted toward the war and have been for months. And so in that kind of climate, you know, how can you really create change? How can you challenge the administration? And how can people who are outside the Beltway and not in the media feel that their views are being paid attention to? I mean, when I talk to people outside of Washington, I don't find a lot of support for this war, but those voices aren't represented in the media. And then the third piece of it is a very powerful right-wing media, and that media caricatures the opposition. Rush Limbaugh refers to people who oppose the war as a pro-Saddam movement. And I think people have to realize that all of that noise from the right wing does make a difference. It can't be just consigned to the right wing. It affects the national consciousness, and it eventually spills over into cable. And again, it sets a very intimidating climate where opposing views are not heard, and it's dangerous, and it's been going on, you know, when Congress debated this in the fall. And so it skewed the entire debate. So that media playing field is a structural problem for people who are in opposition.
Are there actions that ordinary citizens can take to sort of challenge that the media coverage? It seems to me that many of the reporters themselves aren't using the power that they have when reporters are marginalized in the White House press corps for asking the tough questions. I was reading a report where some reporters that had been doing that were reassigned to seats in the back of the room, and none of the other reporters have seemed to risen to the defense of veteran reporter Helen Thomas, who has been extremely marginalized and almost her reputation has almost been impugned by the White House for asking the tough questions. Are there actions that citizens can take that would help to try and bring some sort of balance and fairness into the coverage?
Well, I believe there are. I think that, you know, there again, I think we need a more organized movement in this country to do that. But the right certainly does it. The right has moved the media. They've invested in this for 30 years. They've moved the media to make it more conservative. They organize their complaints. They write into the networks. They email. Now, there's a pretty active, I mean, if you look on the internet, there is a pretty active kind of opposition movement that's going on. My sense is it's not really strongly coordinated the way the rights is, but those things do make a difference.
David,
people in NBC News who get these emails from right-wing pressure groups, they do, you know, even subtly, it affects the consciousness of what's going on. So, I mean, letters to the editor, things of that, those do make a difference. People, I feel the media they don't hear enough from progressives.
But I think it's also worthwhile to note that we don't need to ask the media to be liberal or conservative. We need to ask them to be objective because they are supported, many instances, by tax dollars. The airwaves that they use belong to the American people. I think we should utilize, as much as we malign some aspects of government, we should flood the FCC with charges of bias. I believe that when the president speaks on these issues, there should be a comparable hour's time being given to the opposition, whether it is, in essence, civilians or members of the legislature. If you look at the Sunday morning talk shows for the last 4 to 5 weeks, though they allege that they have been balanced, I've sort of taken an informal poll. First of all, they have no people of color that are on the opposition, no women, no underserved, underprivileged, impoverished, etc., that would come on and be able to offer a different perspective, a human perspective, to this issue of war. So I do think that we need a groundswell, a movement to do the 30 years of work that the conservative elements did. We need to be back in the saddle doing 15 minutes or 10 years or 2 weeks of a groundswell to address this unfairness.
Mm. Mara, did you want to respond?
Yes, I did. I think that that's a very important point that David was making about the media, but it has had an interesting convergence with the reality of what people are experiencing on the streets and the movement that's growing in the United States. And, for example, last October, when there were 200,000 people in the streets of Washington, D.C., and the next day, the media covered that, or didn't cover it, as if it had never existed. The New York Times said that there were just thousands. NPR said there were hundreds. But the interesting thing is that many of those people who had never been politically active before, who were just joining a progressive social justice movement for the first time, open up their papers, turn on the radio, and realize that the mass media was lying to them. And it was really the first time for many people that they had this recognition that they were being lied to. And they got on the phone, and they got on their emails, and they sent faxes. And the New York Times was forced to correct its story 2 days later. NPR was forced to issue a correction. And it was really a dramatic change for people, and I think a very empowering one as well.
Thank
what we have
having.
To realize is that the commercial media does not belong to the people, never has. Because the whole question of how we conduct elections in this country, instead of with massive amounts of money, could be done very simply by requiring the media to provide for free television, because most of the money comes from television that's required for these campaigns. But we have decided, at least the leadership of this country has decided, that the commercial media, especially television, does not belong to the people. Never did.
Okay.
I just wanted to say, in reference to something that Michael Eisinger had said earlier, that there is a national call around the country for emergency actions should the administration seek to go forward and begin launching an attack against Iraq. There is a call that says, if war breaks out, walk out. And people all around the country are planning to get up and leave their homes, their offices, their jobs, and go out and meet at central locations in their cities and their communities. And that is a very important action, and it's one that's being organized by International Answer. People can pick up flyers at internationalanswer.org. And there are also traditional calls for immediate day of actions at 5 p.m. in local places, in central locations, in communities all around the country.
And I would just ask, why wait until the bombs start falling? Why not plan
Do it now.
Well, a walkout?
People have been doing mass actions. There are actions going on all week, and I think that the walkout, the stay away, it's an important factor of non-cooperation.
And I'd like to add, if they could press for the Congress to debate this question again this week before the actual troops begin any action.
That's
that
right.
Congress has the sole authority to declare war, and because we have not used that power, we do not abdicate the power. We must debate the question of war on the floor of the Senate and the House this week.
U.S. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Houston, Texas, Mara Verheiden Hilliard, co-founder and constitutional rights attorney for Partnership for Civil Justice. Draft articles of impeachment may be downloaded at www.votetoimpeach.org. Michael Essenscher, coordinator of the Labor Committee for Peace and Justice in the Bay Area, and he's with the U.S. Labor Against the War Committee. His website is www.uslaboragainstthewar.org. David Brock, author of Blinded by the Right, and Ambrose Lane Sr., host of We Ourselves on Pacifica Station WPFW. Finally, tonight, as the investigation continues into the causes of the explosion of the space shuttle Columbia, we present this piece of satire from the Christmas Coup comedy players at Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston and WBAI in New York.
We now take you live to the Oval Office,
where Vice President Dick Cheney and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice are meeting with the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Mm. Whose idea was it, you two, to have an Israeli astronaut on board the space shuttle when I'm trying to have a war for oil in Iraq?
The crew was a diversity model, Mr. President.
Ah. Then I guess we know whose idea it was, Mr. President.
We all approved the Israeli astronaut.
Yeah, but who okayed the black guy?
Mr. President, I am shocked. How could you overlook the marketing opportunity the dead diversity model astronauts are to you and your just and victorious war against Iraq and whomever?
Well, Condi is right, Mr. President.
Thanks, Dick.
Well, you can cash in on this one big time.
You guys are great. I'm glad we had a black guy and a Jew on our spaceship.
Totally.
I can exploit the situation as I was trained to do as a young, smart coke addict at Harvard. Now it's time for prayer. God bless America, the greatest nation in the land. My fellow Americans, and distinguished Americans, and fellow guests, brave, courageous, freedom-loving astronauts who heroically, patriotically exploded mysteriously and religiously are now in heaven eating cookies with God and Jesus in hope for a swift and successful conclusion for our war in Iraq and Korea and the other place.
Amen.
Amen.
Only God, no other kings. Let the mighty eagles.
The Christmas Coup Comedy Players.
Until the philosophy which owed one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until there are no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Hermes Rivera at UN Radio, and Keith Shaljian. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producer, Sam Husseini. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website. Or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.
South Africa, saw by you.